All right, this is interview three with Mr. Saldana at 10 sharp on January 14th, 2026. let's get that out of the way.
Yeah.
So, my first question for you is, were you present at the Columbus Day conversation?
I helped organize and plan it, yeah.
Okay.
So, yes.
All right. So, whenever it finished, was there anything specific that stuck in your mind?
There's a lot of things. What particularly in particular do you... I guess, what in particular are you curious about?
Like...
Because, like, from my lens, you know, I'm the associate director of Community and Belonging, I'm N through 12. I see a lot of things, and some are pertinent to the actual discussion. Some are more about student engagement and behavior. Some of it are operational and logistics, right? Like, you know, some of what I see, I'm like, oh, did I have enough cookies and brownies, right? There's part of it is, was, you know, I walked out of the room being like, was this publicized enough to get more bodies in the room? You know what I mean? So, like, what in particular are you, you know, I guess... Yeah, I've got lots of observations after. Especially if it's something, a program that I'm putting on for the school. Like, next week we have a day of service. There are lots of sort of, like, in celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Like, I have, there are lots of intricacies I'm looking at. Is there a particular part you're curious about?
I guess I would be most interested in student engagement and student engagement in general, because that's so important to, like, what I'm connecting to later on with shift and conversations.
So, I was really proud of the fact that students were having a conversation. Like, what I was most proud of was that students were having a conversation, and the conversation was not led by an adult.
Of course.
Right? That was the first... I walked out of the room. When you plan a discussion like that, you never know how it's going to go. And there's a world where I am planning and thinking about what it looks like if it goes off the rails. Right? And, like, how do I stop it? and so a lot of that is sort of my brain entering it and trying to mitigate, you know, having that kind of diverse and complex conversation and making sure kids walk away feeling like I got something fruitful out of it. And a kid doesn't walk away feeling like I was offended by what I heard in that room. Right? And so, like, that's sort of my line in, like, those. Because in this political climate, this social climate, it's hard to have civic and courageous dialogue without somebody not attaching your thought, your opinion of something to their personal identity.
Of course.
And sometimes people are, let's be clear, sometimes they are trying to attack your personal identity in their commentary, right? And but for the most part, I'd like to believe that humans are inherently kinder than that, and that, like, someone who is asked a question about a topic is giving their opinion and may not be thinking about the folks sitting around them and their journeys, right? So when I left that room, what I was really proud of is that people walked away not saying, I was offended by some of the things people said about Columbus or Indigenous Peoples Day, you know? I had multiple kids who didn't speak, who were like, that was actually really cool to hear people have that those conversations and, like, not want to kill each other. Like, that's, I had a kid say, a senior say that to me. Okay. And that's what I want, like, more than anything. Like, more than anything for kids, for students, for adults, that we can have a dialogue, and sometimes it can get tense, right? Like, we can have a different opinion, but we can walk away respecting each other's humanity from that moment on. So,
of course. So, after that, from what I understand, Shift as a club or as an idea started off pretty soon after. And I remember it was specifically you, correct me if I'm wrong, but you sent out the email to the student body notifying them and telling them to join. Was organizing the club your decision after seeing that environment of students who were receptive to talking and who, in your words, didn't want to kill each other?
Yes and no. So for some institutional history, institutional context, Shift existed even before I was here. So Shift was a club when I started here, my role as associate director of community and belonging, 4 years ago. At the time, the faculty member running it, Miss Wilder, was away on maternity leave. So, like, I kind of jumped in. And over the course of the years, the club sort of, like, slowly, It just met less. And I think Miss Wilder had, like, a huge part of, like, bringing this club to life. And then when she went on maternity leave, I think me being new, the kids used to a specific structure with her, it kind of just, like, fizzled out. Okay. And I think one, and I'll go back to a previous comment I made, one thing that I think is lost on our world is that we just can't have civic courageous dialogue without people unfortunately needing to attack someone's identity. And what I thought to myself was, wow, our kids can do this if it's structured the right way and we provide them the tools. They can do this. Like, this doesn't have to be the rest of the world. Like, we can build something and have something that is just, like, unique to GCDS, but also, like, stands as a model for, like, possibility. And I think what ended up happening is I went to Dr. Smith and Mr. Ramirez, who were the they are the coordinators for the Upper School Community and Belonging Office. And I've been wanting, I'd say for about a year, since like last spring, winter, I've been wanting to bring Shift back, but I didn't know what it would look like. And so I decided to host that conversation just because as a program that our office does. And I was like, huh, oh wait, this is the new Shift. Like that was like, I walked to your point, to your earlier question, I walked out being like, this is the new Shift. This is what Shift looks like moving forward. And so I sat down with Dr. Smith, I sat down with Mr. Ramirez, I was like, hey, we need to come up with a new acronym for the club. We need to think about leadership. Here's my idea. And they were like, we're game. Let's do this. And so shortly after that first thing, I started to put things in place, like sending that email out. I mean, you're leader of the club. All the things that you've seen is stuff that, like, between myself, Dr. Smith, and Mr. Ramirez, we worked really hard to sort of put together to get this off the ground in the hopes that, like, this becomes a student-led discussion space. I think you've attended some roundtables. I love the roundtables, but I think those have become an adult space, right? It feels like there are a lot more adults than students in that space. And I think for that reason, when I watch or I'm in that room, I see kids walk by and I think they see 20 adults and they're like, I'm gonna go. And I also think the questions aren't chosen by students. So for me, Shift is an opportunity for the kids to be at the center of choosing the discussions and leading it. Whereas I think a little bit of the roundtables, you don't have a place, while you all may be interested in the topics, you don't have a place in choosing the topics that you want. And as a collective body of, I think, 12 Shift leaders, you know your student body better. You all navigate different social groups, different clubs, different teams, different classes. You know your peers better than any of the teachers will. You'll know what they want to talk about, right? Like, it's why you were able to say, like, oh yeah, kids want to talk about seminar right now. Like, because there's different experiences that don't feel equitable across your 9th through 12th grade journey as a GCDS student. So I think Shift did come somewhat out of we've had this club before and kids kind of know about it. And let's, to steal a phrase that we've used before, rethink, reimagine, or retire this. And this was a reimagining of Shift. And honestly, I'm really excited about it.
Of course. I agree. I'm also excited about, like, the prospects of Shift and just building a more receptive environment to these conversations.
Yes.
Because I think that's the goal.
That's the goal, 100%.
I remember Dr. Smith, I just interviewed her.
Yeah.
And she said that we really don't want to have kids, because there are a lot of places in the world where people are tiptoeing around certain topics.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of a goal of Shift is to reduce that and to let people know that we're receptive. Do you think that just the nature of Shift, like being a student-led club and having student-led questions and discussions, do you think that has made the environment more receptive to students actually coming and attending, like compared to roundtables, which I see as more intellectual?
Yes. I think it is more approachable if you're a ninth. To your point about the intellectual sort of capacity needed to enter the roundtable discussion because of the adults in that space. You have people who are work private sector, former professors. Like, there's a capacity there that I don't think that I think there are plenty, let me be clear, I think there are a lot of students who can hold their own in that room. I also know children. I've taught kids from nursery through 12 in my 17-year career. It is completely developmental for you to not feel like, as a kid, 15, 16, even 17, or 14 for that matter, we have 13-year-olds in the building meeting this year, right? We, to feel like there are 12 adults in that room, I don't have the space in that room, right? Like, it takes a level of courage that the teachers are like, hey, we want to hear from, what do the students in the room think? Still, it takes a level of courage to be able to do that. There's a different level of comfortability, and you see this in a classroom discussion when it's one adult, right? The kids are all talking, bouncing. It's one adult. You put eight adults in that room, that conversation looks a little different. And I think just the nature of allowing you all, take the questions aside, because I think the questions are part of, like, you're 12 students, you don't represent the total 460 plus. I think just the fact that you all are leading it and sitting in front of the table and say, here's the topic, here are some facilitation questions, here are norms for the discussion. Anybody want to answer this first question? And we'll start there. Makes our students feel like they can sit there and share their piece and not have the pressure of, like, I need to have this knowledge or content base to participate. I'll give you an example. Last year we did, maybe now 2 years ago after October 7th, Mr. Rohde led a roundtable discussion simply about Israel and Palestine and what happened on October 7th. The goal of that was for students who, there were, as you can imagine, there were a lot of students who, not only our Jewish students, but students across the board who felt really sad about that day and, like, what occurred that day for various reasons, whether it be supporting a peer, they have a personal identity, they have family in Israel, they have family in Palestine. Like, it's complicated. And so what we realize is there are kids who are like, I don't even want to touch this topic because I know nothing about Israel and Palestine. Rightfully so, right? Like, we don't have a course that covers that. At least now we do, but we didn't. Where are they learning about that in history, right? And so it was important for us to, like, host a space where it was just like, let's talk about what's going on. Partly where all of this started my thinking was that day, because there were kids who told me, hey, I'm going to go to the thing because I don't know anything about Israel Palestine and how we got here. Unfortunately, when we got there, the discussion wasn't, there were kids who walked out of the room because, like, I just want to know why Israel and Palestine have been, because that's just not, they just don't have the history. I just want to know why Israel and Palestine have been fighting for so long. Why are there these geopolitical issues that extend far beyond the geographical bounds of these two nations and involves all these other countries? Like, how do we get here? But that's not what it was. And so, like, there were kids who walked out, was like, I just need to know what's going on. And there were kids who walked in who were like, I didn't know it was going to be that conversation. And I share that because that was my first instance of, when you have a facilitation, there are people walking in the room with a knowledge base and a content base, and there are folks who are not. And for our students, depending on the topic we choose, it's our responsibility to shift leaders. Your responsibility to give them that content base, right? So if you say, I want to have a discussion, I just had Grant send me a G-chat, like, hey, I just thought of an idea of post-MLK, can we lead a GCS shift conversation on what would MLK think of what is happening with immigration in the United States today? Great question. What I would ask and challenge all of you as student leaders is, like, you're going to have to give some history on immigration policy before you throw these questions at kids, right? Like, give a quick, hey, here's some important dates or facts on a fact sheet. I'm going to give you a one-pager fact sheet so you have this content knowledge base before you decide to participate in this discussion. I think it allows students to walk in with their shoulders sort of propped up and feeling like they're prepared for a discussion versus, like, well, I'm a little out of my depth here. I can't have that. Even with the thinking about the Indigenous People Columbus Day, like, even that one was a think about that conversation. There are kids who could just show up and like, hey, here's what we've talked about at my family dinner. I want to share a little bit about what I believe or about why GCS has both these days, thinking about her. So my hope, I guess, is, and, you know, this is a backwards way of answering your question, but I think there, to your point about the, I'm holding on to that part because I think it is really important what you said. It's intellectual. I think our shift conversations are intellectual, but meet kids where they are versus ultimately sometimes meeting adults where they are, if that makes sense.
I think that's what I meant to say when I said intellectual. I didn't mean it as in shift was unintellectual.
I heard that, and I guess for me, it was like sometimes it's just scary to walk in a room with 12 adults. You aren't afraid of it, like you will walk. I've seen it. Like you're sitting in that. I've seen you sit in those round tables, and it's like you and another kid and 20 teachers. But what I do know about kids, I sit at the door often because I have to go in and out, and I'm watching every kid's face like there's an intensity to walking in a room with 18 teachers.
Yeah.
And not every kid, versus when it's student-led, there can still be 18 teachers in the room, but they're not the ones driving conversation. Because if you think about the GC, the Indigenous People Columbus Day conversation, there were like 10 teachers there. But, like, you wouldn't, other than Mr. Rohde, who's going to, like, do his thing, you wouldn't have noticed there were 10 teachers in the room.
Of course. And I think that, I think that's something that contributed to, like, not knowing is that a lot of teachers who were there were just there to either listen or they were planning on talking, maybe, but they realized and then they just let the discussion happen. Like,
because they saw their students doing it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think that, with all of your examples about October 7th specifically, mm-hmm. and people walking out because they just wanted to learn, I think something that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think shift for you might be a goal of not only a vehicle of discussion, but also a vehicle of learning, and specifically like learning other people's viewpoints, and if it's like a situation like Israel-Palestine, learning why this is being talked about in the first place.
Yes. Why? I've got a peer next to me who came into school today crying. Why are they so upset? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I know that something happened in the, and this is like a true, if I'm a 14-year-old kid and like I'm not Jewish or Palestinian or I don't have friends that I belong, I don't know anything about that community, I don't know anything about the Muslim community, I'm looking at my, and I'm seeing a peer cry, and I'm like, I don't know, right?
Like, it can feel intimidating.
It can feel intimidating!
Yeah.
Hey. And it's really hard to be a teenager and go up to your peer and be like, hey, what's up? Why are you crying today? What happened? And so this, like, I guess my notion, like, part of my thinking around shift, it's about developmentally appropriate for all kids, right? But I do want to hold on. I'm going to go back to your point because I think it, like, you've got me thinking about a bunch of stuff is, there's an intellectual capacity piece that I want to bring to kids too. But what I do is like not every kid's coming in with the same knowledge base. And so like, how can I lead a group of kids? We lead a group, you all shift leaders to say, hey, we're going to have a conversation about a little bit of immigration policy because that's hyper relevant right now, mm-hmm. right? But like, we know that you may not know about some of these laws that are passed. So let's give you a 1-page fact sheet. We're going to go through it really quickly. Here are our discussion questions. It's all talk.
Okay.
Right? That feels more approachable for a freshman and a senior. It just feels more approachable for a freshman and a senior.
Because it's like meeting people where they are.
It just meets people where they are. And my big thing around community and belonging work is about like, let me meet somebody where they are. Because at the end of the day, I don't get fellowship. I don't get collaboration. We don't get to empathy, we don't get to inclusion, we don't get to equity if we can't find a way to meet people where they are and not judge them for where they are. It's so easy to judge somebody for where they are. Yeah. Oh, you believe this? Well, you're a, let me slap the label on. I'm just not, and this is all personal, this is an I statement. I'm just not a believer we get to any place that is like fruitful, thoughtful, productive, positive when we slap the label on somebody and we hold on to that label forever. Even when a kid makes a mistake, like, you know, in my role, I say often I don't deal in discipline, but a lot of things that kids say and do come my way. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things I say, if a kid meets with me, you know, says something racist or says something sexist and, you know, we meet, One of the first things I'll say, let's say a kid says something sexist. One of the first things I'll say to a kid is, like, you're not a sexist. What you said was sexist. And it gets them to understand that, like, you hurt somebody in the community. And, like, we are human enough to say I'm sorry. We're human enough to learn from our mistake. And we're human enough to take actions to say that, like, I can be different. And that's everybody. Like, that is me as a person. That is, like, Dr. Haig, who's not here over there. That is every student. We have that capacity. And I want to find ways to, like, make that capacity real. And I do feel like SHIFT can be a vehicle for meeting kids where they are and feeling like, even if I don't participate in discussion too, I'm there and I hear the things of my peers and I hear the differencing opinions. Like, I got 3 emails from parents that night of the Indigenous people, Columbus Day parents I don't know, who said, my kid went to some GCS conversation thing and we talked about it at dinner and it was, like, pretty awesome. And they said that, like, you were part of planning it. Thank you. That, to me, is, like, a beautiful thing. A kid sat in the room, didn't say a single thing, learned and heard stuff, and then went home to dinner and was like, hey, this thing. They didn't talk about any of their other classes. They didn't talk about statistics. They didn't talk about geometry. They went to the dinner table and they said, we had this conversation about why GCS celebrates Indigenous people, and it was kind of cool.
It's, like, an amazing thing. Like, that's not something that you see every day.
That is not something you see every day. And yes, it's 3 kids. Do I hope that, like, there were 37 kids in the room? Do I hope all 37 did that? Yeah. Am I an idiot? No, I know they're not all doing that. But there's something. But I do know the conversations carried outside of that room. And I'll again make the statement: is there's no greater joy for me as a teacher after I teach a lesson than my students walking out of the room and they're still talking about the thing that I just taught.
Because it's like a transmission of knowledge. And that's, like, that's the goal of teaching. It's, like, to transmit knowledge.
When I leave my senior elective and we just had a conversation about First Amendment rights, mm-hmm. and they're arguing down the hallway and I look down the hallway and I see them still arguing about First Amendment rights all the way down to the spiral staircase, I'm like, yeah, that's this is great. I don't care if they got if I don't have an assignment for them that night, I don't care, like, what their grade is. That's teaching. That is learning. That is learning in fellowship too, right? Like, you don't learn, to me, like, yeah, there's a beauty of, like, I can pick up a book and learn something. I think there's a beauty also in learning in collaboration and in fellowship. And that's part of, like, what the hope of this SHIFT thing is. We're learning together.
I think it's really interesting that you brought up the collaborative aspect also, because to circle back to, like, the difference between roundtable and SHIFT, this is just, like, a personal observation I had. I don't know if you share mm-hmm. that too, but I think along with the intellectual quality of it, the roundtable is also, like, more rigid. Like, it's less – I personally think it's less flexible to people. Like, of course, the topic can change, but at the end of the day, there's still 8 adults in the room. There's still, like – personally, I noticed that there were only, like, 2 kids there, and they were both seniors. So, like, with the difference between roundtable and SHIFT, I think the greatest difference is, like, rigidity, and that SHIFT is more willing to be flexible, and because it's more flexible, it's more collaborative with students. Do you think that, like, rigidity plays a part?
Well, I think that's the nature of working with kids. You're all more flexible than we are as adults. Yeah. Right? Like, I want things a certain way because I'm 37 and I've lived my life this way. I'm like, this is what makes sense. We do it this way. And, like, the beauty that I've gotten out of, you know, 17 plus years of teaching is, like, a kid being like, it doesn't have to be done that way. And it's always a shock to my system. I'm like, yeah, you're right. It doesn't. Like, even SHIFT, the seniors who graduated, who used to run SHIFT, were like, when they graduated 2 years ago, and that was the last sort of, like, time we had SHIFT, we didn't have it last year. One of the seniors who graduated was like, we don't have to run SHIFT this way. And that's what got the brain thinking. There was that, and then October 7th happened, and I was like, yeah, we don't. Like, I was so adamant on trying to keep this thing the way it was, but I couldn't be another teacher. I couldn't be Mrs. Wilder leading this. I couldn't make that happen that way. And so, like, that kid being like, it can be totally different, and I think it needs to be. It was like, me being who I am as a teacher, an adult, it's harder for me to see that, like, things can be, we can rethink, reimagine, and retire stuff. And that's okay, right? That doesn't mean we're doing something wrong, right? Like, yeah. I think sometimes we attach the label or the binary thinking to the process, right? Like we're attaching like, ah, because we did it this way, it's probably bad. No, it'll be bad. There's this, all these things worked. Let's start to tweak and change a little bit of this. And to your point, it becomes more approachable for a kid, right? To me, every day should be about what are we doing to help kids have those types of conversations. And yeah, again, not every kid is going to have the confidence to participate, but just sitting in the room can be learning too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think you all, to the rigidity part, you all leading this and you sort of myself, Dr. Smith, Mr. Ramirez, sort of taking a step back and letting you all do that is what makes it less rigid. Because that's not how you all operate, right? Like, you all don't operate from a place of, like, it has to be this way. You're like, well, this works. So can we do it here? When I said, hey, the Commons isn't available anymore, you all were like, let's do it. Here are three different rooms. I'm like, ah, we can't do it. Commons is the best place for it. We can't do it. You all threw out four different rooms. We're like, oh, I can talk to Dr. Mary about using her room in SPIC. I'll talk to Ms. Hubertus about it. If not, then we can do. And I'm like, okay, you guys solved the problem for me. Right? I'm like, if it's not in the Commons, we're not just not going to do it. That's my rigidity as an adult. All of you saying, no, this is still going to happen, Mr. Saldana. I just offered out four places. Do you need me? You know, Matea being like, oh, I already talked to Ms. Hubertus. She said we can use it. By time, 8 hours, I'd say even 11 hours later, we had four rooms. And I had no part of talking to the teachers about the rooms. Like, those were the kids in our shift club. And I was like, okay.
It's like what kids will do if they're right? passionate.
Right? When they're passionate about something, when they want something to happen, when they're excited to lead, when they're given sort of the scope and boundaries, like, I'm kind of like, sweet guys, do your thing.
Yeah. And I think that's an important skill to have as a teacher also, just an authority figure in general. Like, if you're helping somebody and then you realize that, or you're leading something, you also have to let people take their own part. And kind of like, if they're very passionate in it, you have to let them do their thing also.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a lot of me. I'm pretty type A. Like, I have a vision for things. Like, I have a vision for things. Like, to your point, I have to know when to be like, oh, no, they got this. They got this. This is not, right? Like, our next shift meeting, one of the things I want to bring to the table is having discussion norms in the one pager I just thought. But other than that, like, you all are going to decide your next topic, and I'm just here to figure out whatever I need to figure out to help you get it off the ground, right? Mm-hmm. Be in the room just as a person to make sure it runs smoothly. Like, that's to me, that's a beautiful thing. That's like a beautiful, it honestly, the two discussions we've had, I've walked away being like, this is, it's a joy as a teacher. It really is. And again, I think it's because it's kids doing it. If you got eight of us in a room, we'd be like, all right, this is eight adults in the room. We would pontificate and, wrestle over, like, structure based on how we each believe it would go. And you're all just, it's also with kids, when you're all deeply engaged in something and find passion in something, you come to consensus much easier.
Of course.
Right? And so, like, even in that room when we're like, no, I'll take on the poster, Grace is like, anybody want to help me? Annabelle's like, yeah, I'll help you with the poster. I don't think they've ever really connected before, but I saw them in the hallway making the poster. Right? Like, and that's all because you all are passionate about this, you're engaged in it, you care about it, and you're like, all right, let's do this.
Yeah.
So I just think it's, I'm very excited for what these next conversations look like. I really am.
And to with shift and like the goal of it, to connect it back to just in general, like GCS values with the student body, do you think that us being able to have shift, because I was talking to Mr. Donahue about shift,
yeah,
after I proposed the topic of this profile that I'm, yeah, writing for GCS News,
yeah,
and he said that something really unique about shift is that it shows that GCS can ask itself questions about itself and rethink certain aspects about itself. Do you think that that's unique to like GCS values? Do you think that's like Tiger Pride, for example? Do you think that's helped it?
So I think there's two ways I'd answer your question. I think shift is uniquely trying to amplify those Tiger Pride values. Like when I think of inclusion, I think of responsibility. I think of trust, right? There's a trust factor. Like you inviting three of your friends into that room to have that conversation, there's a trust there, right? Then I'm going to walk out of the room having this conversation and not be offended by what was said in that room and hurt. There's a trust there. So I think there's a world where we're doing our best to try to amplify Tiger Pride values. I think, and now this is me speaking to the I and the other part. One of the things, I used to be a coach, I was a co-teacher here. I'm going to share, I have to go back and share a story. I was a co-teacher here, God, I'm old, some time ago. And as a co-teacher, I had a very different experience here than I'm having now. I love being at GCDS. When I left here, and Mr. Lay hates when I tell the story because we've been friends for a long time, I said I would never come back to GCDS. Huh. Adamant about that. When I came back, this position opened up. Mr. Lay was like, Mr. Lay and I have been friends even after I left here and I taught in some other places. And I came to interview for this job. One of the things that I was like so taken aback by was the ability for GCDS to adapt and ask questions of itself. And the way that I describe this, and I say this when I'm interviewing people, I say this in admissions, the beauty, and I've worked at, this is my fifth school I've worked at in my career. All different types of school, more progressive, more this, all various different types of schools. And I went to a lot of different schools. I went to Catholic school, I went to charter school, I went to independent school, I went to public school. I share all of that because what I think is really unique about Shift in our club and GCS as a whole, particularly our upper school, is I can throw, and this is the analogy I finally use, I can throw paint on the wall and watch it drip and it will make art. And we're like, boom, let's do that. And then we're going to make another version of that art to make it even better. And I think that's a beautiful, that's like GCS in a nutshell. The other part that makes GCS really beautiful, throw paint on the wall, and we're like, we missed a little bit. Wipe it away, throw more paint, and see what happens. I think that's life, too, right? Like, you have to be able to be like, ah, I'm trying to create this thing, and it didn't quite execute it the way I wanted to. All right, where's the grit to try it again, right? Like, where's the passion to do it differently? And I think what brought me back here to say, yes, I want to come back to GCS was that piece of, like, I'm going to throw paint on the wall. We're going to try something as teachers, as kids, and we're going to see what works. Shift in its first iteration. That is that. It worked this way. Our kids are, that's 5 years ago. Our kids are different. The political climate, social climate is different. The upper school has grown differently. Let's throw some more paint on the wall and rethink that shift and like, let's see what comes out of that. And here we are. Right? And I think that's, I think that's uniquely GCDS, and I think that's unique to our upper school. And I think that's a really, as someone who went to boarding school, has been in independent schools arguably since I was 14 years old, that is not true of a lot of independent schools. It's not true of a lot of independent schools where you can say, you know what, that didn't work. We're going to start from the beginning and we're going to try again and do it differently. Right? Like a lot of schools will say, like, this is who we are. This is the way we do things. Get on board or get on the ship or get off. Right? We're saying, no, we have the ship. Get on, help us continue to make the ship bigger and greater and more beautiful. If you're feeling like you need to get off, all right, we'll wait for you. All right, what's going to help you get back on the ship? That's a unique different, that's something different. And I, to my earlier story about co-teachers, that's what brought me back here. Right, like that idea that like, no, you're not bad. Again, I hate labels. You're not bad or wrong. You didn't do anything poorly simply because it didn't work out exactly the way it was supposed to. Life doesn't always shake out that way. That's the reality. And I think there's a learning lesson even in that with our kids too.
Of course. And I really like that analogy is like throwing paint on the wall and mm-hmm. being able to say it didn't work and then scrubbing it again. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed Dr. Smith before this. And something she said is that she thinks Shift goals, or she really wants Shift to be able to help kids develop or teach discernment to kids about not only like what we should talk about here,
yeah,
but also like discernment with like how they should operate. That's what I took from it. Do you think that teaching discernment, and I also said that teaching discernment is a very valuable skill, but it's one of the hardest skills to teach. And that like free conversation like this with low barriers is one of the only ways that we can really develop discernment. Do you think that?
And this is low barriers, right?
Yeah, like, it's very low barriers.
You just got to show up.
Yeah.
You don't even have to say anything. You just got to sit. You sit. eat some cookies, eat some brownies, and you walk out and you're like, I really learned something.
And you learned something.
And you learned something. And it encourages you, especially if you're going to sit there and you're just going to learn something and you may not participate, you don't feel that confidence yet, cool. But you had that thought that you heard your peer say. Ah, I've thought about that before. That builds the confidence to say, no, I'm supposed to be in that room, and I can participate in front of my peers, whether I'm a 9th, 10th, 11th, or 12th grader. Yeah, I can raise my hand and say, I heard what you said. I wanted to piggyback off of it. I wanted to add something or elaborate on something I was thinking about related to. I heard what you said, and I wanted to ask a clarifying question related to it. Right? The second, the third, the fourth time, that kid is like, yeah, I belong. I can be in this space. Right? I am enough for this space. Right? Thinking about, we talked about the rigidity, all of that. So it's not only discerning. I think she's right. Right? Like, it's not only discerning the discernment of the topics and like the meat of the discussion we're having, but it's like the social emotional piece too. Because from my lens, I'm also focused on that social emotional piece too. Of like, yeah, I'm a kid who like, I'm trying to discern if like I'm enough to be in this room. Do I have the intellectual capacity to be a part of this conversation? Yeah, but I can be a part of it in a way that feels appropriate for me. I've discerned that, like, and then again, I now have heard part of the conversation. I've heard the things said. I've had those thoughts. I would want to ask this question next time, or I would want to follow up with one of my teachers about it. It then becomes, they're discerning things about their own identity and, like, who they see themselves as learners and as students and as, like, community members at Greenwich Country Day, right? Like, oh, you know, we have a freshman. You're a current leader, and you'll be a leader for this group for the next 4 years, but, like, you'll have other freshmen that'll be like, wait, I didn't think I could be a part of this club. And like, you know, we'll have seniors graduate in a few years, and like, maybe that is where they see themselves. And they're like, no, I can be a part of this too, right? So it's discerning of, it's discerning in lots of different ways. No, I'm in total agreement with Dr. Smith on that. And it's why it's also awesome, like, that my co-leaders and co-advisors are Dr. Smith and Mr. Ramirez, because we are all aligned on understanding that our kids need to have these conversations. It needs to be led by them. And that, like, we're here just to sort of, like, shepherd the process. And, like, I think all three of us are sort of in, like, lockstep in that belief of shift.
Of course. And I also, this is just, like, my personal opinion, like, used earlier. This is, like, an I statement.
Yeah.
But I think that shift is, like, it's hard for me to, like, put into words, but it's almost like the greatest example that I've seen of, like, a community and belonging, like, endeavor or, like, an office. I think it's, like, if I had to explain what community and belonging is, mm-hmm. or, like, its operations in one sentence, I would just point to shift. Because it's, like, it establishes that community of, like, this is the student body, you can come and talk here, and you can learn about topics. And there's also this, like, belonging, like you said, with the trust aspect. Like, you can invite your friends or something. Like, you can invite a friend and can invite two friends, even if you know nothing about it. And then you might want to keep coming back. You establish that sense of belonging. And I think that...
And you're all establishing that trust, too. Yeah, you're like, hey, trust us as the 11 or 12 leaders to help you have this conversation and sit with us in fellowship and sit with us in discussion, right? Like, you're all bringing that... you're help building that trust with the... Like, whether you see it or not, you're helping build that trust with your peers. Of, like, you know, maybe I can't go to that, but I can go here. Right? And that's a really beautiful thing. Really beautiful thing. So, I'm very excited for what the remainder of this year looks like, but also next year. And what, like, you know? And, like, do I know the conversation's going to be hard for kids? Do I know kids are going to wrestle with some, like, deeply divisive and diverse opinions on things? Yes. And that's okay. And we can still walk away respecting each other's journeys, each other's humanities. And, like, that's human. Like, to me, that's human, to be able to be like, yeah, I don't agree with you on this thing. But, like, I understand you. I understand where you're coming from. And, like, we're still in the community.
Wars. Yeah.
Still, so like, we still have a job to do for each other and the community.
There's like a sense of openness, and like if I express my opinion and you have a different opinion, I'm not attacking you.
Yeah.
And like,
it's not that red herring. Like, I now have to attack your like personal. Like, and that's what I want to avoid, because I think there's so much of the outside world that is feeding into that. Right? Like, oh, we have a difference of opinion. Let me slap the label and tell you you're this.
Exactly. And there's another thing that Dr. Smith said in the interview. And she said that there's a lot of the outside world, and especially like nefarious actors on social media and other things like that, who can help spread disinformation or help polarize things.
Yes.
And then students can see that while they're at home and then bring that into their own environments, or maybe even into the classroom.
Into the classroom. Oh, yeah.
And then it's just something like that. So do you think that shift can also like lower the barrier and help combat or like meet disinformation where it is, and like, or the polarization of things?
Yeah. I mean, that's our hope too. And like when we get back and I introduce like the one pagers, that's the hope with the one pager. Because what I noticed about not less the seminar, well, a little bit of the seminar, is like how it would have helped if we, you know, had a grade distribution for seminar for students, like, you know, 63% of students are getting A's, you know what I mean, in ninth grade seminar. We had a blurb about 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th on a sheet of paper to see, like, what was the vision behind doing seminar, right? Like, there's a world where I see this shift thing, like, in a year, maybe even two, filtering down to middle school, where there's like the same sort of idea. I mean, now that would be more teacher-led because of the nature of, again, I talk about development always, right? The nature of a 6th and 8th grader being in a room without a knowledge or content base and joining in a conversation about Israel-Palestine, right? Like, yeah, there's a, it looks different. And is there a world where we are still creating those spaces for kids in the middle school? And what does that look like? And how do we walk? Again, same idea, but developmentally and age appropriate. It doesn't happen. You know, maybe it doesn't happen as often. Cool. It doesn't have to happen as often. But, again, it gives space for kids to approach conversations and dialogue. Because what I think it often happens is a lot of kids, I'll talk, speak upper school in particular. Actually, can speak to the middle school a little bit too. There are things that go on in the world, and kids just don't know where to bring the question to. I can't tell you how many conversations a day that I have with a kid was like, hey, did you hear about what happened in so-and-so? I'm like, oh, what class are you in? This would be a good connection. But like, they're not sure that's the space to have it, so they're going to have it with me. Or they're like, hey, I was at a social gathering this weekend, and this happened at this person's house, and it made me deeply uncomfortable. Here's why. Because it, okay, what do we do with that information? And I think shift can be a place where kids can like think and unpack the larger world around them in a safe way. And in that, they can wrestle with the misinformation and disinformation that is like so prevalent in our world, right? They can wrestle with that and like, yeah, I was scrolling TikTok and I heard this thing. Okay. How much of that is TikTok? And how much of that is TikTok and real? And how much of that actually has to relate to, like, this dialogue we're having here, right? And like, where are the connections between why that is present on a social media platform and how we're having this conversation right now?
Yeah. And there was something else that you commented on with, like, students just not knowing where to bring those things. And exactly with the middle school, with hoping this can shift down to the middle school. This is just, like, an experience that I had. I remember it was about... It was either late 2023 or early 2024, and it was with it was then called the DEI office.
Yeah.
So that I had a certain perception of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was invited to a discussion about, well, it wasn't really a discussion. It was just like a space. It was just like a talk space, essentially.
Yeah.
It was about 7 or 8 other boys, and we were talking about Tyree Nichols' case.
Oh, okay.
And this is just... This isn't really the fault of the office or anything, but I felt like because it was just so tightly knit, and because we were just like 7th and 8th graders back then, mm-hmm. there was really like, A, I don't think there was really like an exchange of opinion.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't really a diversity of opinion. And B, I don't really think there was anything to talk about. Because like you said, we felt like in, like scared or intimidated by this thing because there weren't as many like other people who we thought we could talk to. And also I think there was a racial diversity aspect of it also. Do you think
because your experience is so divergent?
Yeah.
Right? And there's a racial and ethnic and geographic and social, there's a different sense of, and you probably know, you came from OCR, so I can act, I'm going to interview you for a second. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a different, let's talk just diversity and demographics. Do you feel that diversity and demographics here differently in the upper school than you do in the middle school?
Yeah, of course. I think there's a lot more like, how do I say it? I think I'm just going to say it directly. Yeah. I've seen like a lot more like, Black people, like Latino students especially. Yes. Like
There's more students of color in this, and faculty of color in this. I'd say students of color. I can say that categorically. In the upper school than there are in the middle school.
Yeah, students of color was the label I was looking for.
But there's more geographic diversity. When we talk about being 70 zip codes, mm-hmm. or that's mostly here. A lot of that is in high school. Right? When we talk about socioeconomic diversity, a lot of that's here. Mm-hmm. Your greatest metric for other forms of diversity, research shows, is socioeconomic status. So when you bring in a socioeconomically diverse group of people, you hit religion, you hit family accomplishments, you hit generational, you hit all the other cultural identifiers you're looking for. And our high school represents a lot of that because of our socioeconomic diversity and because of our geographic diversity. You feel that. Even your, maybe typical wealthy white kid that lives maybe up in Wilton, living in Wilton and living in Ridgefield and living up in, Dobbs Ferry ain't the same as where most of your friends go to public school in a smaller town. Is not the same as living in Greenwich, right? Being a kid who's traveling from Yonkers or New York City, for that matter, to Greenwich, and your experience is coming to Greenwich every day and then going to New York City, that's a different experience.
Of course.
Being a kid who is in a single family home, different experience. Being a kid who's in a family home, but you have your grandparents living with you, different experience. And all of those different journeys allow for a bit more diversity in conversation because it's a diversity of experience and journey.
And a diversity of opinions also.
And opinions come with that too.
Because like example, like with the media, like people can see the same, like you can sit like 50 people, or maybe that's too much, and they could be all different socioeconomic status and have different family histories and everything. You could show them the same like news channel or news broadcast and they're all going to pull different things from it. Like for example, if it's a report on the Israel-Palestine conflict, because mm-hmm. I remember you mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
One person might say, oh, exactly, this is really bad, and I think, why aren't we showing more of this? Mm-hmm. And there might be another person who's saying, this news report is biased against Palestine, or this news report is biased against Israel. Like, there's a diversity of opinion there mm-hmm. that's inherent wherever you get
and there's a diversity of interpretation.
Yeah, interpretation
yeah.
also.
Yeah.
And that also is, I think, personally, from what I've seen, that's fueled, like, especially to go back to, like, just to circle back to what we originally started mm-hmm. with the Columbus Day, mm-hmm. like, that diversity of interpretation and diversity of experience really helped a lot, really helped the conversation a lot with, like, flowing.
Well, to your point, there was clearly some divergent views in that room around Columbus Day and Indigenous Peoples Day. And the question wasn't centered around because what was interesting is 2 days later, Indigenous Peoples Day was disbanded. Why do we as GCS, we're not talking about we as people, to your point, it's like we're investigating ourselves yeah. and how we fit into the larger world. And we don't have to be exactly like the larger world. Right? And so we don't have to be.
We can be our little bubble in
the world. We can be our little bubble, but we can also be our little bubble that says we send kids out into the world that says, yeah, it doesn't have to be that way. Right, we can see possibility, we can see problem solving, we can see solutions that maybe the rest of the world isn't seeing right now. And that like starts with creating spaces where kids can be like, yeah, I know like the larger world is talking about that, but like we can not do that and maybe do something a little different and see what the positivity that comes out of that. So
exactly. I think in general, like the I think SHIFT succeeds because of, like, the foundation of our school also. Like I said, with that diversity.
100%.
That's a big 100%. Like,
SHIFT doesn't exist. I've worked at several different schools. Mm-hmm. SHIFT doesn't exist at some other schools. Like, I can tell you that categorically. Like, having worked at some other independent schools, because of who we say we are and what our mission and our values are, it exists here. Not sure it exists in other places. And again, I can speak to, you know, I've worked at a handful of other schools. I have colleagues that work at a bunch of this, like that. Like, I don't know if that kind of space exists. Furthermore, I sit in lots of different networks of people who have my CMB DEI job, and like, they're kind of baffled sometimes that we have some of the things we do. But that is rooted in what you said and what our mission is. Because I'm a mission and value person. When I come up with a program, when, you know, I'm developing a program like SHIFT or other stuff, I'm like, is it mission and value aligned? Does it align with Tiger Pride? Does it align with who we say we are?
Of course, yeah.
And if it doesn't yet, how do I get it to be mission and value aligned? How do I get it to be Tiger Pride aligned? Right? Is always the question I'm asking myself, thinking about the day of service. All right, are we planning something that is going to be mission aligned? Or are we planning something that's going to be Tiger Pride aligned? And if not, how do we get it closer to that? Because there's a, to your point, there's like a beauty in how that's come about.
So just to like connect back to that mission and values, that mission and value statement, and like mm-hmm. finding those missions and values, just for time, I think this might be my last question.
Yeah.
If you had to sum up the values and mission of SHIFT in one sentence to somebody who knows nothing about SHIFT but who does know something about the school, what would you try to say, or what would you boil it down to? Like, not only our aspirations, but also, like, right now. Like, how do we handle things?
So, if I want to make sure I'm hearing your question. If I am a mission store walks by me and Mr. Madden stops me and says, hey, I was just telling about one of our clubs, SHIFT. Can you tell this family a little bit about it?
Something like that.
I would say, and how would it, does it align with who we are? We say that we are trying to build the next set of global citizens at Greenwich Country Day. To do that, you have to have students who have the intellectual capacity, empathy, and skill set to be able to have diverse conversations and complex conversations while also being able to problem solve and find solutions. That also means there's a perseverance aspect and a resilience aspect to that, where kids have to understand that whatever you are producing should be to the benefit of the all, the community, whatever that is, right? And so when I think about SHIFT, you all have signed up, the 12 of you, for no thing, and the three adults, it's a thankless reason to say we want to give something to our community. No one, you all chose to do that. You all applied and said, I want to give something to our community. And this is the way you've decided to give, right? And I would tell a family, this is an example of our students presenting their intellectual capacity, showing their empathy, and then taking that out and giving it to the people that are closest with them, their peers. I mean, I think that's kind of how I would describe it.
I think it's amazing.
Thanks, man.
This interview has been... Like, at times, I don't even think this was...
It was larger than SHIFT.
It's larger than SHIFT. It's like it's a conversation about a lot of things. And I want to thank you for being flexible like that mm-hmm. and being able to just go beyond what I entered with.
Like, well, I also think I appreciate that your questions weren't... You're obviously a kid who can see the micro, but also see the macro of why this matters. And I don't know, and again, this goes back to the meeting people where they are. I don't know if all of your peers have that, But I do believe the more we do this, we build their capacity to see why it's so important.
Of course.
Right? So.
I agree. All right. This
How'd
was.
I do?
It was great. This was interview number 3 with Mr. Saldana. It's 10:54 on January 14th, 2026.